Of all the interesting places in our country, the American West may just have the most interesting stories. Recording Library of West Texas volunteer Jack reads articles from Range, American Cowboy, and other publications on the Western Magazine Hour, Wednesday mornings at 11 and again Sunday afternoons at 5 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 64 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 40s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 40s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the low 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your coronavirus update for Monday, January 18th, 2021 from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael, and coming up in today's program, we'll read several articles, including California health official urges pause on use of Moderna vaccine lot following possible allergic reactions. COVID-19 variants may not be more deadly, but they can still cause more deaths, says Fauci. U.S. is facing relentless strike from COVID-19, says former FDA commissioner. Advice from a doc: don't delay key medical appointments in the pandemic. Without a national strategy, U.S. states were left to battle the virus on their own. And then we'll have a few articles from the Texas Tribune, including lives are at stake. Three Texas regions battered by coronavirus are out of intensive care beds. Trump administration extends health care safety net for uninsured patients. And an analysis from columnist Ross Ramsey: is the Texas Capitol a government building or a petri dish? First, we'll look at the numbers. Local numbers are coming today from the Department of State Health Services. For Ector County, confirmed cases, 6,547. Probable cases, 5,675. Fatalities, 267. Estimated active cases, 797. Estimated recovered, 11,158. And it looks like we have incomplete numbers from Midland County. Confirmed cases are 13,334. We have no probable cases listed. Fatalities, 200. Estimated active cases, 2,409. Estimated recovered, 10,725. And for Texas, from the Texas Tribune: health officials issue dire warning as Texas sees its worst COVID-19 outbreak. Average new cases increased by 89 cases compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On January 17th, 15,667 new confirmed cases and 2,007 new probable cases were reported. Hospitalizations increased by 617 patients compared with a week ago. As of January 17th, 13,728 Texans are hospitalized for the coronavirus. Average new deaths increased by 29 deaths compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On January 17th, 207 new deaths were reported. Now here are coronavirus briefs for this Monday. The United States reported 174,513 new coronavirus infections on Sunday, bringing the total number of confirmed cases nationwide to at least 23,933,368, according to data from Johns Hopkins University. Another 1,723 virus-related fatalities were also recorded on Sunday, according to JHU. At least 397,574 people have died from COVID-19 in the U.S. during the pandemic. At least 31,161,075 vaccine doses have been distributed, and at least 12,279,180 shots administered, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. As of today, the global coronavirus cases surpass 95 million. 60% of all U.S. COVID-19 cases have been reported since Election Day. Los Angeles County adds more than 11,000 new coronavirus cases. Los Angeles public schools offer to serve as mass inoculation sites. Expect 500,000 COVID-19 deaths by mid-February, incoming CDC director says. Thousands of troops arrive in Washington without widespread testing. London to pilot 24/7 vaccine centers by end of the month. India vaccinated more than 200,000 people on the first day of its mass immunization program. Germany has vaccinated more than 1 million people. Confidence in Chinese vaccines has taken a hit, but as cases rise, some countries are still pushing ahead. Dollar General will pay workers to get the coronavirus vaccine. 9 people linked to the Tennis Australian Open test positive for COVID-19. And now here are the articles for today. California health official urges pause on use of Moderna vaccine lot following possible allergic reactions, from CNN's Hira Humanyan. California's state epidemiologist, Dr. Erica S. Pan, recommended pausing the administration of COVID-19 vaccine from Moderna's lot 041L2A in a statement on Sunday due to possible allergic reactions. A higher the number of possible allergic reactions were reported with a specific lot of Moderna vaccine administered at one community vaccination clinic, Pan said. Fewer than 10 individuals required medical attention over the span of 24 hours. Out of an extreme abundance of caution and also recognizing the extremely limited supply of vaccine, we are recommending that providers use other available vaccine inventory and pause the administration of vaccines from the Moderna lot 041L20A until the investigation by the CDC, FDA, Moderna, and the state is complete. We will provide an update as we learn more, she said in a statement. COVID-19 variants may not be more deadly, but they can still cause more deaths, says Fauci, from CNN's Health's Lauren Mascarenhas. More infectious COVID-19 variants that are not necessarily more deadly can still cause more deaths, Dr. Anthony Fauci said Sunday in an interview on NBC's Meet the Press. Even though on a one-to-one basis it's not more virulent, meaning it doesn't make you more sick or more likely to die, just by numbers alone, the more cases you have, the more hospitalizations you're going to have, and the more hospitalizations you have, the more deaths you're going to have, he said. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recently warned that COVID-19 variants could accelerate the spread of the virus in the United States. Fauci said the U.S. is closely examining new variants, including one first identified in the U.K. and another more ominous strain identified in South Africa and Brazil. Health officials are watching out for whatever new strains could lessen the impact of COVID-19 vaccines, which would prompt some modification to the vaccines. Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, says it's important for people to double down on public health measures and get vaccinated as soon as they can to prevent excess hospitalizations and deaths caused by new variants. U.S. is facing relentless strike from COVID-19, says former FDA commissioner, from CNN Health's Lauren Mascarenhas. With a new variant of COVID-19 spreading across the U.S., the nation is facing a relentless strike from the virus, Dr. Scott Gottlieb, former Food and Drug Administration commissioner, said Sunday. I think what we're looking at is a relentless strike from this virus heading into the spring, Gottlieb said in an interview on CBS's Face the Nation. The variant of COVID-19 first identified in the UK has now spread through multiple U.S. states. While it does not appear to be more deadly, health experts believe it is likely more infectious. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recently warned that it could accelerate the spread of the virus in the U.S. In about 5 weeks, this is going to start to take over, he said. The only backstop against this new variant is the fact that we will have a lot of infection by then, so there'll be a lot of immunity in the population, and we will be vaccinating more people. But this really changes the equation. While surveillance of COVID-19 variants in the U.S. is developing slowly, Gottlieb said data from the U.S. and other nations shows that the number of people infected with the new variant will likely double every week. Whereas infections really would have started to decline in the spring, we would have had a quiet spring. We could have persistently high levels of infection in the spring until we finally get enough people vaccinated, he said. Advice from a doc. Don't delay key medical appointments in the pandemic. From CNN's Katia Hedder. As many people postpone necessary medical care due to the pandemic, medical professionals are worried that their patients will get sick or even die from other causes. Some 25% of Americans said they or someone in their household had delayed medical care in the past month due to coronavirus, according to a December Kaiser Family Foundation study. An earlier report from the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention found that 41% of Americans delayed medical care, including 12% who postponed urgent or emergency care. CNN medical analyst Dr. Leanna Nguyen, an emergency physician and visiting professor at George Washington University Milken Institute School of Public Health, says she certainly understands why some people have postponed their medical appointments, but expressed concern that patients are foregoing care for ongoing medical issues. It's important for people to check in with their doctor's offices, she said. Nguyen advises that when making decisions about postponing appointments, consider if it could be done virtually, or if that's not an option, can you combine multiple visits to reduce overall risk? Without a national strategy, U.S. states were left to battle the virus on their own. From Sarah Mervosh, Mike Baker, Patricia Mazzi, and Mark Walker, New York Times. For nearly the entire pandemic, political polarization and a rejection of science have stymied the United States' ability to control the coronavirus. That has been the clearest and most damaging at the federal level, where President Trump claimed that the virus would disappear, clashed with his top scientists, and abdicated responsibility for a pandemic that required a national effort to defeat it, handing key decisions to states under the assumption that they would take on the fight and get the country back to business. But governors and local officials who were left in charge of the crisis squandered the little momentum the country had as they sidelined health experts, ignored warnings from their own advisors, and in some cases, stocked their advisory committees with more business representatives than doctors. Nearly 1 year since the first known coronavirus case in the United States was announced north of Seattle on January 21st, 2020, the country is hurtling toward 400,000 total deaths and cases. Hospitalizations and deaths have reached record highs. The situation has turned dire just as the Trump administration, in its final days, begins to see the fruits of perhaps its biggest coronavirus success, the Operation Warp Speed vaccine program. But already, a lack of federal coordination in distributing doses has emerged as a troubling roadblock. The incoming president, Joseph R. Biden Jr., has said he will reassert a federal strategy to bring the virus under control, including a call for everyone to wear masks over the next 100 days and a coordinated plan to widen the delivery of vaccines. "We will manage the hell out of this operation," Mr. Biden said on Friday. "Our administration will lead with science and scientists." The strategy signals a shift from the past year, during which the Trump administration largely delegated responsibility for controlling the virus and reopening the economy to 50 governors, fracturing the nation's response. Interviews by The Times with more than 100 health, political, and community leaders around the country and a review of emails and other state government records offer a fuller picture of all that went wrong. And now here are some articles from the Texas Tribune. Lives are at stake. Three Texas regions battered by coronavirus are out of intensive care beds, by Megan Menchaca and Mandy Kai. Health officials in Laredo, one of three Texas regions whose intensive care unit beds are full, are pleading with residents to stay home and prevent coronavirus spread as the city's hospitals overflow with patients. Hospitals are overwhelmed and at capacity with the surge in COVID-19 cases. They are having to divert patients to local standalone facilities at this moment, the city of Laredo told residents Sunday in an emergency message, according to Texas Public Radio. Lives are at stake. We are asking you to stay home unless it is absolutely necessary. The Abilene and Bryan College Station areas also had no ICU beds available as of Sunday. The Texas Department of State Health Services said in a tweet Friday that the pandemic has never been worse in Texas, and it has never been easier to catch COVID-19 in the state. The department is greatly concerned about hospital capacity and stressed that ICUs across Texas cannot take much more. Laredo Health Authority Dr. Victor Trevino said in a statement Sunday that more than 36 patients would be diverted from the emergency room to standalone facilities throughout the city. The Laredo Health Department reported nearly 4,900 coronavirus cases last week, and the area set a record for daily infections reported with more than 2,000 cases on Wednesday. We plead with the community to stay home and limit activity to essential purposes, Trevino said. COVID-19 patients take up nearly 49% of the Laredo region's hospital capacity, according to data from the Texas Department of State Health Services. That's a much larger number than any other trauma service area region in the state. The Abilene and Bryan College Station areas have frequently reported having no ICU hospital beds available since as early as mid-November. Health officials from those areas were not immediately available for comment. We are not able to keep up with this increase in cases that are testing positive, Brazos County Alternate Health Authority Dr. Seth Sullivan said in late December, according to KBTX. It has certainly taken a turn for the worse over these past several weeks, and I'm very concerned about the next 2 to 4 weeks. According to the Laredo Morning Times, the Laredo region led the state in the rate of hospitalized patients being treated for COVID-19 since mid-December. The amount of COVID-19 spread is exceeding the ability to handle hospitalizations, resulting from people who are continuing to participate in high-risk and high-contact activities, Trevino told the Morning Times. Texas has reported more than 1.8 million confirmed COVID-19 cases since the pandemic began. More than 32,000 people in the state have died with the coronavirus as of Saturday. Hospitalized COVID-19 patients in Texas have steadily increased since October as people traveled for the winter holidays, gathered indoors to avoid the cold weather, and faced COVID-19 fatigue over restrictions and precautions. In the summer, some Texas hospitals ran out of drugs, beds, and ventilators as they faced a statewide increase in coronavirus cases. Now, cases across Texas have surpassed the numbers hit in the summer, and Laredo is one of many cities facing overwhelmed hospitals and record coronavirus hospitalizations. Austin health officials opened the Austin Convention Center Tuesday to keep ICU admissions, which have hit record highs in the area, from being overwhelmed. The UT Austin COVID-19 Modeling Consortium recently projected that ICUs were expected to hit capacity soon in Austin. The state is in surge. The state is in crisis. Dr. Mark Escott, interim health authority for Austin and Travis County, said in a press conference in early January, "It seems very clear to us that we are going to run out of hospital beds and that we are going to have to stretch resources in order to meet the needs of our community." Some emergency rooms in North Texas are also holding patients because there's no space in the ICU. Dr. Robert Hancock, president of the Texas College of Emergency Physicians, told the Tribune earlier this month. Dr. Justin Fairless, an emergency room doctor in Fort Worth, said earlier this month that there are coronavirus patients in the hallways of hospitals because there's nowhere else to put them. Trevino has warned that Laredo will become medically overrun unless people take action to stop the spread of the virus, including wearing masks and avoiding gatherings. Now, also from the Texas Tribune, Trump administration extends health care safety net for uninsured patients, by Jolie McCullough. In the final days of President Donald Trump's tenure, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services agreed Friday to extend for 10 years Texas's health care safety net for uninsured residents. The federal funding agreement, known as the 1115 waiver, reimburses hospitals for the uncompensated care they provide to patients without health insurance. It also pays for innovative health care projects that serve low-income Texans, often for mental health services. Safety net hospitals have relied on the waiver to serve poor, uninsured Texans, and it was set to expire, alarming a broad coalition of doctors, hospitals, and patient advocates who feared the funding could be lost. The new agreement will continue hospital reimbursements until September 2030, but it will allow the Innovation Fund to expire this year, according to a government letter announcing the waiver extension. A new program will be implemented to partially fund behavioral and mental health clinics. The state's first 1115 waiver was approved in 2011 and was meant to be a bridge to Medicaid expansion under the newly passed Affordable Care Act. But a few months after signing the Texas waiver, a U.S. Supreme Court ruling gutted the Medicaid expansion portion of the sweeping federal health law, and Republican leadership in Texas, which has the nation's highest rate of uninsured residents, stood fast against expanding Medicaid. But state officials have worked to keep the waiver's federal funding, which was last extended for 5 years in 2017 by the new federal administration under President Donald Trump. Now his administration has again extended the waiver as one of its last acts, this time by 10 years. Some Republicans applauded the extension Friday night. State Representative James Frank of Wichita Falls tweeted that the extension will allow the ledge to focus on improving Medicaid and reducing health care costs for all Texans. But those pushing to insure more Texans criticized the state for seeking an extension early while Trump was still in office, and the federal government for approving the request without a public comment period. Three Texas organizations that advocate for expanded health care said in a recent letter to the federal government that the coronavirus pandemic has left even more people uninsured. Texas has relied on its waiver funding to address significant gaps in care that result in large part from the state's failure to expand coverage, the letter said. And now this story, also from the Texas Tribune, The Analysis by columnist Ross Ramsey. Is the Texas Capitol a government building or a petri dish? The Texas Capitol, where lawmakers gather every 2 years to pass laws, write budgets, and argue politics, has a new function in 2021. It's the incidental scene of a large public health experiment, a human-scale science fair exhibition of intense social interaction during a pandemic. It's going as you might expect. State Representative Joe DeShotel, Democrat Beaumont, ended the first week of the Texas legislature's 2021 session with a positive COVID-19 test. He let the colleagues who had been in close quarters know that he's feeling fine, but also flagged them on his infection. And maybe infections of their own. State Representative Michelle Beckley, Democrat Carrollton, sits directly in front of DeShotel on the House floor, close enough for discomfort in times like these. She was wary enough of the coronavirus to stay home on the first day of the session, but attended Wednesday and Thursday. And now, in the wake of DeShotel's news, is tweeting that she'll self-quarantine for 10 days. Only 19 weeks left until the regular session is over. The Texas House isn't requiring members to be tested before they enter the House chamber, the floor they call it, for business. The company line offered by House Speaker Dade Phelan and by State Representative Todd Hunter, Republican Corpus Christi, as he led the debate over the new House rules, is that until tests are available in the state's schoolhouses or courthouses, they shouldn't be required in the Texas House. Good rhetoric, dubious policy. Parts of this are like any workplace with executives, office holders, in their own offices, and staff members often sharing an attached common space. In ordinary times, visitors, constituents, lobbyists, food delivery services, are in and out of their offices. During a legislative session, the Capitol is a bustling place with different House and Senate committees in session, hearing from dozens of witnesses in front of sometimes overstuffed rooms of spectators. The cafeteria is a busy oasis for the political and legislative animals who gather to eat, talk, laugh, holler, shake hands, hug, and share information. It's built for a kind of transmission, for the movement of ideas and arguments and debate, and it is very fertile ground for a contagious virus like the one that has ravaged the world for the last year. State officials are trying to be careful without looking too paranoid or seeming to care more about their own health than they care about yours. With those things in mind, it's natural that their precautions are full of holes. While the public comes through a ground-level door to get into the Capitol, a visit preceded by a quick COVID-19 test in a tent outside, most of the people who work in the building park in an underground garage and can skip that public health speed bump. Testing for COVID-19 is left to the discretion of each House member and individual, Fallon wrote in a Friday memo to members. Testing, he noted, is available in a legislative office building near the Capitol or at the entrance where the public is tested. The standard for getting into the Senate is higher, at least with regard to the coronavirus. Anyone entering that chamber has to have been tested first. When we get to the part of the session when House members begin visiting the Senate and vice versa, the difference in testing protocols could get interesting. Most of the people who work in the Capitol don't work in the chambers. They're in offices and cubbyholes throughout the building. Some taking tests, some not. A few of them vaccinated, most of them not. All of them prepared for the long, long hours of work that make up a 140-day regular session of the Texas legislature. That works pretty well when you're not in the middle of a pandemic. They can't shut it down and do the things a government is supposed to do. It's hard to keep people out and still pretend to be representing constituents who are unseen and unheard. And it's difficult to argue that schools and businesses should stay open if they close their own building, or to get vaccinations or treatments that aren't widely available to everyone else. They're stuck, just like the Texans they represent. And that is your coronavirus update for this Monday, January 18th, 2021, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael. Coming up next, we will bring you Health Magazine to take you to 2 o'clock, and then it'll be USA Today with the national news. Local news coming up at 3 o'clock, and here are some of the articles our volunteers have been reading. From the 3-day weekend edition of the Midland Reporter-Telegram published Saturday, API says energy will lead nation's economic revival. Association looks forward to working with new Biden administration on common concerns. Capitol. Lawyers discuss charges against Cudd and Rosa in Capitol mob. Improvement expected. Commentary. It's easy to be excited about MISD's superintendent pick. And from the Saturday, Sunday, and Monday editions of the Odessa American, MCH prepping for vaccines next week. Pre-register online or via phone for the Pfizer shot. ECISD working towards serving 1,000 3-year-olds. New Hispanic Chamber leader ready to go. Small business owner says he will get group back on track. Those are some of the stories that our volunteers will have for you this afternoon at 3 o'clock. And then, of course, we'll have more news finally at 6 o'clock tonight with the Wall Street Journal. Thank you, as always, for being with us. We'll be back again tomorrow at 1. Be safe and have a great day.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 67 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 40s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 40s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the low 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is intended for a print impaired audience and is brought to you by GARS, the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Hello, I'm Allison Ramsey and this is Health Magazine. Today I'll be reading from health.com. The first story is How to Deal with Stress, 14 Ways to Cope from Experts by Lauren A. Green and Corin Miller, updated on January 11, 2021. Feeling particularly anxious? There are right ways and not so right ways to get your stress under control. Here's how. How to deal with stress. You're not born knowing how to deal with stress. Instead, you slowly learn over time what does and doesn't work for you, mostly. While stress is a normal part of life, it's still tough to live through. And sometimes you get thrown curveballs you haven't dealt with before. While some research has shown that short bursts of stress can be good for you, a new study out of Ohio State University and published in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences found that dealing with persistent long-term stress, like that from a toxic boss or from caring for an elderly parent, can actually change your genes, leading to an increase in inflammation that can bring on a variety of health issues. That's one of the reasons why it's so important to learn how to cope with stress the right way. Also, it's nearly impossible to fully banish stress from your life. Over the course of a lifetime, everyone will be confronted with various types of stress. Monifa Sewell, MD, a board-certified psychiatrist in Atlanta, tells Health. Because of this, it's important to develop healthy ways to manage stress. These are the best, expert-backed ways to de-stress right now. Get outside. Research indicates that the vitamin D boost from sunlight may elevate your levels of feel-good serotonin, and there's something about being in nature that's just good for your mental health. Being outside is a time-tested and research-supported way to reset your emotional balance. Alicia H. Clark, PsyD, psychologist and author of Hack Your Anxiety, tells Health. Not just a change of scenery and an opportunity to leave our personal spaces, being outdoors can be a great way to manage stress and anxiety. Can't get outside? A Washington State University study published in the Journal of Environmental Horticulture found that when plants were added to the workspace, subjects exhibited a lower systolic blood pressure. Basically, they were less stressed. Move more. Exercise may be the healthiest stress buster. It revs your body's production of feel-good endorphins, helps regulate your sleep, lowers the symptoms associated with mild depression, boosts your energy, and helps you remain calmer and more focused, all of which can go a long way towards stress management. While it's easy to let a daily exercise routine slide when you're overwhelmed, take steps to incorporate it into your day. Pick an activity you love and will look forward to, enlist a buddy to motivate you, or schedule it into your calendar like any other task. And soon you'll understand why it's a critical part of any stress management plan. Over the moderate to long term, it will help you feel more fit and energized, and thus better equipped to take on the challenges that come your way. Craig Smith, PhD, Associate Professor of Psychology and Human Development at Vanderbilt University, tells Health. Stick with a routine. Whether it's taking a bath before bed, listening to your favorite playlist on the commute to work, or walking the dog to the park down the street every morning, in times of stress it helps to turn to a comforting routine. A consistent routine also helps you sleep. For some people, this helps because you'll have less idle time to sit around and ruminate about the things that are stressing you, Dr. Sewell says. The key is to create a reasonable schedule and one that includes breaks, time for fun activities, time for meals, and time for sleep so that the schedule itself doesn't become another source of stress. Do something with your hands. Do you ever get that never-ending loop of negative thoughts and what-ifs playing in your head? That's because stress likes to mess with your mind. A surefire and fun way to get out of your head is to engage in activities that put the focus on your hands or body. Think kneading bread, sketching a picture, knitting a scarf, or climbing a rock wall. Kathleen Hall, a health educator and the founder and CEO of the Stress Institute, an Atlanta-based facility that offers programs on stress management and work-life balance, tells Health. As your hands and fingers begin to fall into those familiar rhythmic moves, it sends a signal to your brain that immediately relaxes you and makes you feel grounded. So immerse yourself in a creative, engaging activity and get ready to press the mute button. Connect with your spiritual side. For centuries, religious groups and native tribes worldwide have used prayer beads to guide their spiritual practice. And research shows that spirituality might boost happiness in times of stress. Buy a set of prayer beads or make your own, suggests Hall, and then create a positive affirmation or mantra that resonates with you. No need to be religious. You could even use your fave inspirational quotes. Then, next time stress hits, repeat your affirmation as you work your way around and touch each bead. The more you go around, the more you'll experience a sense of power and detachment from the source of anxiety as your brain switches into a meditative cadence, explains Hall. Visualize yourself calm. Find a quiet space, close your eyes, focus your breathing, and transport yourself to your happy place for a few minutes each day. Research from the University of California, Los Angeles shows your body actually produces less of the stress hormone cortisol when engaging in guided imagery. There are plenty of books and articles written on the subject if you need help getting started, but the most important thing is to find a comforting and calming image that works for you. A beautiful blue ocean might be totally relaxing to one person, but a nightmare for someone who's afraid of water. Take a bath. Water has an innate soothing effect on the mind and body since it connects us back to our time in the womb, says Hall. Schedule a regular time to soak in the tub. Further your bliss by pairing your bath with aromatherapy candles or bath beads. Pick a scent that smells best to you or go for lavender or jasmine, both of which possesses stress-reducing properties. Make gratitude a regular practice. Several studies have revealed the positive effects of expressing gratitude. National Institutes of Health researchers found subjects who showed more gratitude had higher levels of activity in the hypothalamus, a part of the brain that has a huge influence on our stress levels. Plus, gratefulness also activated the regions associated with dopamine, one of those feel-good neurotransmitters. To reap these stress-reducing benefits, write down your feelings of gratitude daily in a journal, or by sending little notes to friends or family, letting them know how much you appreciate them. Watch your vices. Drowning your stress in a bottle of wine or a pack of cigarettes might bring a release in the moment. But turning to unhealthy vices like drinking, drugs, smoking, or too much caffeine only sets you up to stress out more once the high wears off, says Clark. Sugar, caffeine, and alcohol can all exacerbate stress and therefore should be consumed with caution, especially if you are feeling a lot of stress, she adds. Since these habits tend to increase the negative impacts stress is already having on your body, raising your blood pressure, making you jittery, keeping you awake at night, to name just a few, you enter into a vicious cycle of feeling more stressed out and then returning to the vice over and over. Get enough sleep, but not too much. The thought of hiding away under the covers sounds pretty great when there's so much to deal with beyond your bedroom door, but sleeping too much isn't the answer. Research shows that the more you sleep, the more tired you actually feel. Plus, studies that have shown an association between chronic oversleeping and diabetes, heart disease, weight gain, and even higher rates of death, though it's unclear if too much sleep causes these problems. Adding health problems to your already heavy load is only going to exacerbate your stress levels. That said, too little sleep can make stress worse too. When you're tired and depleted, things look worse and less manageable than when you're rested, Smith says. The sweet spot to aim for, per the National Sleep Foundation, is between 7 to 9 hours of shut-eye a night. Confront your problems. While it's normal to take a mental time out once in a while to watch a funny movie or meet a friend for lunch, consistently avoiding stress in your life is counterproductive. Tuning in rather than turning away from stress is one of the best ways to understand and therefore manage stress, Clark says. The more you ignore something, whether it's a concrete problem like paying off bills or an emotional one like the fear of losing a job, the greater it's going to get. Your best bet is to reach out for help and make a plan of action that will eventually diminish your problems and alleviate your stress. Recognize rumination. You may not know the word for it, but odds are you've ruminated in the past. Rumination typically consists of recurring thoughts focusing on how bad things are and how they will never change, Smith explains. Focusing on how bad things are and about how they will never change produces feelings of depression, and those feelings of depression promote more rumination. The key to stopping rumination is to be able to recognize that you're doing it in the first place. If you ruminate a lot, it can take some practice to stop, but taking a deep breath in the moment, trying to think about how you'll view this stressor in the future, and talking to a trusted friend can all help, Smith says. If it still doesn't do the trick, a counselor training in cognitive behavioral therapy may be able to help with this, says David Clow, licensed marriage and family therapist, founder of Chicago Skylight Counseling Center, and author of the book, You Are Not Crazy, Letters from Your Therapist. Try a different perspective. If you make a mistake at work, do you assume you're going to get fired? Have a fight with your partner and worry the relationship may be over? It's not uncommon to jump to the worst-case scenarios when dealing with an upsetting issue, but blowing things out of proportion only intensifies your stress. When we're feeling stressed, it's very easy to view ourselves in a negative light. Christy Mata, a dialectical behavioral therapist and the author of The Stress Response, tells Health. To soften your inner negativity, she suggests looking at things from a different perspective. Talk to yourself as if you were offering advice to your best friend, and odds are you'll have much more compassionate and positive things to say. Pay attention to your eating. Like alcohol or drugs, food often becomes a crutch when coping with difficult times. Soothing your pain with high-calorie, high-sugar, or high-fat comfort foods feels good at first, but it can quickly spiral out of control when your mind and body begin to associate negative emotions with eating. At the first sign of stress, anger, or sadness, you'll instinctively reach for food rather than dealing with the feelings at hand. Overeating can also make you feel bloated and sluggish, and that's not going to do your mental health any favors, Smith says. Instead, he says, focusing the bulk of your diet on reasonable portions of healthy food can help you stay clear-headed so you can better tackle the stressors ahead. And, Smith adds, if you happen to have some junk food in the mix, it's okay, just as long as it's not your go-to when you feel frazzled. That story was How to Deal with Stress, 14 Ways to Cope from Experts by Lauren A. Green and Corin Miller, updated on January 11, 2021. The next story is the COVID-19 vaccine safe for everyone? Here's who should and shouldn't get it, according to experts. Both vaccines have been issued emergency use authorizations by the FDA, but some groups still have questions about the vaccine safety. By Colleen Stinchcomb. The U.S. officially has two COVID-19 vaccines approved for emergency use by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Pfizer's vaccine, which is approved for use in people as young as 16, and Moderna's vaccine, approved for those ages 18 and up. For right now, both vaccines are mainly being administered to those in the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention's first-round priority group, which includes healthcare workers and those who work and reside in long-term care facilities. It's a monumental accomplishment for science, having not one but two vaccines go through the vaccine development and approval process in less than a year in order to fight the COVID-19 pandemic. But while many have widely praised the vaccines and the scientists behind them for their rigorous testing through vaccine trials, some still have questions about vaccine safety in specific groups. Here's what you need to know. How do we know a vaccine is safe? First and foremost, the CDC maintains that the U.S. has a vaccine safety system that ensures all vaccines are as safe as possible. It's why the FDA was able to grant emergency use authorizations, EUAs, for both the Pfizer and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines after data from manufacturers and large clinical trials demonstrated that the potential benefits of the vaccines outweighed the known and potential harms of coming down with COVID-19. When it comes to the safety testing in vaccine clinical trials, aka determining whether the vaccine is safe to use in those participating in the trials versus whether or not it's effective, researchers track vaccine participants' health throughout the trial. Megan Rani, MD, MPH, an emergency physician and director for the Brown Lifespan Center for Digital Health at Brown University, tells Health. Anytime they get sick, hospitalized, or even die, experts investigate whether it had any possible ties to the vaccine. Trials like the ones for the Pfizer and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines also have independent monitoring boards made up of people who have no ties to the studies. Their only job is to make sure that the drug is safe, she says. It's also important to note that safe doesn't mean zero side effects. Rather, Dr. Rainey explains, a vaccine is considered safe when it doesn't cause serious adverse events. An unsafe vaccine is one that causes permanent or serious harm, things that change the course of a person's life, Dr. Rainey says. Those things can include changing fertility, causing neurological problems, or causing new infections. So regarding the mild side effects that can accompany the coronavirus vaccine, fatigue, headaches, arm pain, there is a small price to pay to potentially avoid COVID-19's more serious symptoms and risks, and therefore don't worry doctors, Dr. Rainey says. Further, it's possible that mRNA vaccines could be even safer than traditional vaccines. They don't contain common allergens like eggs or metals, which may open them up to even more people who have had to forego vaccination in the past. The Pfizer vaccine does, however, contain polyethylene glycol, PEG, an inactive ingredient found in several foods and over-the-counter medications that can sometimes rarely cause allergic reactions, according to ABC News. So who has the vaccine been approved for, and which groups still need more info? According to Pfizer's data specifically, the vaccine was approved for emergency use after it was deemed consistently effective across age, gender, race, and ethnicity demographics for those ages 16 and older. Similarly, data from Moderna showed that the vaccine was also effective in a diverse pool of people 18 and over. About 37% of participants were from racial or ethnic minorities, per the National Institutes of Health. But those demographics are very broad, and the clinical trials for both vaccines excluded a number of specific groups, including pregnant or breastfeeding people and children, though that's not necessarily an uncommon practice. Pregnant people and children are considered vulnerable populations. You have to have pretty good proof that something works before you're allowed to do trials of new drugs with them, Dr. Rainey says. But evidence of the vaccine safety is stronger now, and trials are beginning if they haven't already. There are going to be further trials of kids, Dr. Rainey says. Moderna will begin testing its vaccine in 3,000 children ages 12 through 17, according to the New York Times, with half getting the vaccine and half getting a placebo. Pfizer is already working on it. Children as young as 12 started getting the vaccine in trials back in October. Testing on younger children is expected to begin in early 2021, though it's unclear if vaccines will be widely available to children before the fall semester, according to the Associated Press. And even though pregnant and breastfeeding people weren't specifically recruited to participate in clinical trials, it doesn't mean they were entirely absent from them. Generally, vaccines are not intentionally tested in pregnant people, and that data usually is accumulated over time as pregnant people get vaccinated accidentally or they choose to get vaccinated. Otto Yang, MD, professor of medicine in the Division of Infectious Disease at the David Geffen School of Medicine at UCLA, tells Health. The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, ACOG, quickly supported the idea that both breastfeeding and pregnant people should have the choice to get the vaccine once it would otherwise become available to them. Another population group that the vaccines weren't specifically tested on were immunocompromised people, or those who are on immunosuppressants. But that's due to concern about efficiently testing the vaccine rather than concern about safety, Dr. Rani says. You worry that they're not able to mount as good of an immune response, so testing the vaccine in them is going to show less effects of the vaccine than you would expect, she explains. However, some immune-compromised groups were included. Pfizer included 120 people with HIV in their trial. Moderna included 176 people with HIV, according to PAS. No safety concerns from those groups were reported. Ultimately, it's up to those who are somehow immunocompromised and their doctors if they want the vaccine. People with a history of severe allergic reactions, however, while previously included in clinical trials, are being urged to use caution if and when they get the vaccine. According to the CDC, those who have had severe allergic reactions to any ingredients in either COVID-19 vaccine are urged not to get the vaccine, and they're the only group of people for which the CDC has issued this recommendation. Others who have had severe allergic reactions of any kind in the past, not related to vaccines in general, are urged to still get the vaccine, but with the proper safeguards in place. On-site monitoring by a medical professional who has access to emergency medications like epinephrine, antihistamines. These recommendations come after a handful of allergic reactions have been reported as the vaccine rolled out in the UK and the US. And experts are trying to determine what caused them. Patients were treated and are all doing fine. Right now, there is no reason to avoid getting the vaccine just because you have a history of allergies, Dr. Rani says, though it's worth bringing up previous reactions to vaccines to your doctor. Overall, right now, Dr. Rani says that there's no reason to believe that either COVID-19 vaccine would be unsafe, as in cause severe harm, for the large majority of people, including any groups who were left out of clinical trials. Rather, researchers and scientists haven't collected enough data yet to be able to issue a sweeping statement one way or another. If you have any questions about if or when you should get the COVID-19 vaccine, it's best to speak to your doctor and bring up any possible concerns. The information in this story is accurate as of press time. However, as the situation surrounding COVID-19 continues to evolve, it's possible that some data have changed since publication. While Health is trying to keep our stories as up-to-date as possible, we also encourage readers to stay informed on news and recommendations for their own communities by using the CDC, WHO, and their local public health departments as resources. That story was, is the COVID-19 vaccine safe for everyone? Here's who should and shouldn't get it, according to experts, by Colleen Stinchcomb, posted on January 4th, 2021. The next story is Grapefruit Bourbon Smash. Raise a glass to the new year with this refreshing cocktail. The bourbon and the grapefruit juice are a harmonious sweet tart match, but this drink works without alcohol too. Skip the bourbon, use 1/2 cup grapefruit juice, and add an extra tablespoon of seltzer to each glass. By Liz Mervosh. Posted in Health, January-February 2021. Active time, 5 minutes. Total time, 5 minutes. Servings, 2. Ingredients. 1 cup ice cubes. 6 tablespoons fresh grapefruit juice. Ruby red or pink grapefruit. Plus 2 slices for garnish. 1/4 cup bourbon. 3 tablespoons orange marmalade. 1/4 cup raspberry sparkling water. 2 fresh rosemary sprigs. Directions. Step 1. Put ice cubes, grapefruit juice, bourbon, and marmalade in a cocktail shaker. Cover shaker and shake vigorously until well chilled, about 20 seconds. Strain evenly into 2 ice-filled rock glasses. Top evenly with sparkling water. Garnish each glass with 1 grapefruit slice and 1 rosemary sprig. Serve immediately. That story was Grapefruit Bourbon Smash by Liz Mervosh. Posted on health.com January-February 2021. That concludes today's readings of Health Magazine. This has been Allison Ramsey for the Georgia Radio Reading Service. Thank you for listening to GARS.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today. Followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
The Humane Society of Odessa, 7012 Mockingbird Lane, is offering curbside adoptions, vaccines, warmer, and more. Shelter hours are from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Monday through Saturday. Only one person is allowed in the office and kennels at this time. For applications, vaccine, or additional information, call 381-5503 or 257-4311 or email shelter@odessahumanesociety.org. To see current pets available or to private message the shelter, visit www.facebook.com/Humane Society of Odessa.
Saturday and Sunday mornings, enjoy a variety of religious publications and features. Saturdays at 7 a.m., it's Guidepost Magazine, followed at 8 a.m. with the week's Sunday school lessons. Those are repeated Sundays beginning at 4 a.m. Then Sunday mornings at 6, it's Catholic Today. And at 7, Christianity Today. On Recording Library of West Texas Radio. Read by listening.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 69 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the low 40s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 40s. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with a low in the low 40s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 2 p.m.
Because of today's holiday, this program is not available.